At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Anchorage, Alaska, the meeting between the two presidents to discuss Ukraine and the ending of the war. At least that was the explanation from Washington before President Trump traveled to meet President Putin on what was once Russian land. So there was a lot of irony and smiles here. However, I welcome John Bolton, former National Security Advisor, former Ambassador to the United Nations, writing most recently at the Washington Examiner about the meeting in Anchorage and the significance of the President of the United States before the Alaska meeting, speaking very clearly that he wants Mr. Putin to move towards a negotiated end to the Ukraine conflict. And if not, the magic, the will, was to go to secondary sanctions. John, a very good evening to you. That did not happen. What are secondary sanctions that capture the attention of even the Russians when they're mentioned? Good evening to you, John.
Yeah, good evening. Well, the president, as you said, threatened direct tariffs on Russia and secondary tariffs and perhaps other secondary sanctions on countries that have been buying Russian oil and gas in violation of U.S. and European Union sanctions. Unspecified, but very tough line. And in fact, on the plane, on the way to the Alaska summit, Trump said, I want a ceasefire coming out of this meeting or there'll be very severe penalties. There was no ceasefire at the meeting, and there were no penalties against Russia. The only country that has been affected by Trump's earlier threats has been India, where he added a 25% tariff on top of a new 25% tariff that he had announced for India a few weeks earlier, cutting off negotiations the Indians were thought were leading to something else. So the only victim so far of the threat is India. And I can tell you the reaction across the board in India against Trump is incandescent. So collateral damage for India, unfortunately, no impact on the war in Ukraine, no apparent impact on Putin.
Let's stay with the India story, because there's news that Narendra Modi, the thrice elected premier of India, is traveling to a Chinese port city, Tianjin, I believe, for a meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That's within these next hours, the 31st and the 1st. He will be there not only with Xi Jinping, the host, but also we're told that Vladimir Putin will be there. So we have India sitting down with China, which is something like the Dumbo story of I've seen an elephant fly, and Mr. Putin standing between them. And that's quite a trio. Is that a result of the missed opportunity in Anchorage, John?
Very, very definitely. This is a Chinese meeting ostensibly of the Shanghai Cooperation Council, but also to celebrate their victory in the Pacific Day over Japan. Kim Jong-un of North Korea also purportedly will be there. But it's a way for them to show they're not intimidated by Trump and his sanctions, and really to thumb their nose at the Europeans and the Ukrainians. You know, it's hard to say whether the sanctions would have worked if Trump had applied them, if they really made sense, as opposed to applying more direct pressure, more effective enforcement of the existing sanctions. But by singling India out, for example, even though China buys much more of Russia's oil and gas, it really had the effect of driving India back toward Russia, back toward China, undercutting decades, literally, of U.S. diplomacy to pull India away from Russia, closer to us, Japan, Australia, and others in the Pacific that worry about Chinese aggression, all without thinking more than a few minutes, as far as anybody can tell, not having any strategy at all except to go to Anchorage, Alaska, and meet with Putin and see if he and his old friend Vladimir could come up with a deal. That's his negotiating strategy.
I remember, John, I believe it was 2011, where there was a question whether the Assad regime was using chemical weapons against its own people. And then President Obama said that this was a red line, chemical weapons. And we were lined up for action to take place to punish the Assad regime and perhaps its Russian allies at the time. And then it was called off. And after that, I wonder if that was the moment Mr. Putin read Mr. Obama as pliable. And is that similar to what happened in Anchorage when the sanctions didn't come?
Yeah, I think Trump has never seemed to recognize that, unlike the way he dealt in business in New York, where idle threats are apparently made all the time. I guess that's how negotiations go in the international affairs. If you make a threat, you better be prepared to carry through on it, because if you don't, your credibility is affected not just in that particular dispute, but across the board. I mean, I'm sure not only was Vladimir Putin watching Trump very closely to see what he would do if no ceasefire were agreed to, so was China. In fact, not only did Putin not agree to a ceasefire, he convinced Trump that a ceasefire was unnecessary and they should go directly to final negotiations over a peace deal, which is what Putin really wants to talk about. He wants to restructure the correlation of forces in Europe to push NATO back. So he'd love to talk about the end state, not about the interim for a ceasefire.
Since those meetings, the one in Anchorage, the one in Washington, there have been events that suggest Mr. Putin is not looking for negotiation in any fashion. I believe the missile and drone attacks have continued, including striking very near a British enterprise in Kyiv these last days. And Peskov, the spokesman for the Kremlin, came out and said, we can shoot missiles while we talk negotiations at the same time. That strikes me, John, as illogical. What is the Kremlin thinking right now? I mean, magnifying to us right now. What is the message we're supposed to get? We want peace, but we'll shoot. We'll keep shooting.
Well, I think it shows disdain for both Trump and the Europeans. Putin is mimicking a very successful strategy by the Chinese communists in their war with the Chinese nationalists led by Chiang Kai-shek, and simultaneously war with Japan. They called it talk, talk, fight, fight, and essentially doing both at the same time. And it worked out for Mao Zedong, and I think Putin is copying. But basically, it says we fear no consequences from continuing and indeed acting even more provocatively in our military operations.
Has the United States lost Mr. Modi? That would be a blow to all the plans in the Indo-Pacific.
Well, there are internal political dynamics in India that have worked very much in Modi's favor by whipping up animosity against the United States. So one could hope that they would be temporary. But, you know, Trump, just from my own personal observation, I thought he did have a good personal relationship with Modi. And I'm not sure there's much left of that at this point.
And that is a blow to a lot of plans in the Pacific that have been put together over many years. Correct, John?
Yes, this has been a matter of U.S. diplomacy and interest, seeing the rise of China, the threat of Chinese hegemony along its Indo-Pacific periphery from Japan to Taiwan to the South China Sea, the Southeast Asian countries, India itself with a long and deeply contested border with China. These are all things that should push China toward Japan, Australia, Singapore, the U.S., away from China, away from the Cold War alliance with Russia. And it has gone slowly, and it's been very difficult to do. But in a stroke, it's possible that Trump has set all that back to square one. I hope that's not right, but the signs as of our discussion here tonight are not good.
John Bolton, former National Security Advisor. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.